All right, it's Wednesday night on the Fan pregame. Ailish and Justin with an hour and a half show. We've got John Morosi coming up momentarily. Luke Fox to help us tee up Leafs and Kings. And then we're a little open segment, radio only. Fan pregame after dark.
Yeah, fan pregame after. This is going to be a nice run of fan pregame after darks, I think, given our scheduling here at Sportsnet 590 The Fan with MLB postseason coverage later on. Gives us an extra half hour to just, you know, get into some after dark.
We're going to talk about the amulet.
We are going to talk about the amulet. We're going to have to talk a little bit about the amulet with Luke Fox at 6:30.
Amulet but maybe more amulet plus. Talk.
Amulet Talk Plus. It's
we'll get into
or until 7:30.
The lore of the amulet. But tonight's a good one. Leafs and Kings. We'll have that, off, of course, on Sportsnet. It's Wednesday Night Hockey. I'm going to get down there as quickly as possible. Our show ends at 7:24:50, and the game starts at 7:30.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you have a really good track record with this stuff.
I've
made hockey games yourself. You've been down to Raptors games, Leaf games. You've been to concerts like that. Start right when our show ends. So I have all the faith in the world that you'll get down there and not miss much of the
afternoon. Yeah, I'll probably miss a couple things. I think I'll miss some goals this time around. I hope. Because it was the last game I went to, the Leafs got shut out 1-0.
There you go. Well,
so we're going to have
nothing,
fingers
nothing
crossed.
Is promised, but we shall see.
We're going to cross our fingers that we see some action tonight. Let's bring in John Morosi of MLB Network. John, how are you? Wow, where are you? Looks glorious.
A little bit of a different backdrop today, Ailish and Justin. Great to be with you. I'm actually at the corner of Mitchell and Mangum in downtown Atlanta. I'm working this week at True TV, the alt cast, the data cast.
Oh.
Mike Petriello, one of our friends, worked with me. Dexter Fowler as well. So we're doing the sabermetrically minded broadcast of the ALCS from the Turner Studios. And so I'm a little bit of a field trip today. I'm downtown. And actually, my big ambitious plan for the night, as you both know me very well, so I'm going to stop by the studio because it's an off night for us with baseball. But as you know, Wednesday night here in the U.S. is TNT hockey night. So I'm going to stop in and say hi to the guys, maybe during one of the intermission breaks, and talk a little hockey too.
Look at you. Morosi never stops. I thought you were getting your Benz service.
I thought you were getting a car.
now that would be probably my wife's dream if we were to do that. We're looking for a car. But we're much more in the realm of having three kids, minivans, the utilitarian type of a vehicle. But it is nice for all of us to dream, right?
I love that. I thought maybe we could, if Mercedes was watching, they might send a John Morosi promo
code.
It was good product placement.
Not that I would refuse it, Ailish. Thank you, by the way, for mentioning that.
There
and
you go.
Certainly, we're open to all ideas here.
Okay.
Outside of Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Perfect. And the Falcons, like, you know, half of my household are Falcons fans. So
okay.
They'll really be interested to see how you like Mercedes-Benz behind you, because that's a pretty great spot. Okay, so let's ask you about some baseball. Let's start with Shohei Ohtani, because, of course, we're going to have game three of the NLCS tonight and Dodgers-Mets. That one's tied up 1-1. A lot of discourse about Shohei maybe not being great as a leadoff hitter right now in the playoffs, because he's been able to do well with guys on base. What's the dialogue that you hear about the opportunity that maybe you would move Shohei off the leadoff spot because he's hitting way better when there's guys on base?
You're right, Ailish. 0-for-19 with the bases empty in this postseason is the number. And Dave Roberts has been asked about this. It's become a topic. I think Dave is probably a little frustrated by the discourse around it, seeing as though he's the MVP of the National League, we expect, in that exact role all season long. I would expect that we won't see, and of course, with Game 3 coming up tonight, if the Dodgers were to lose this game, maybe the conversation really shifts and we see a change. But I think all along, Ailish and Justin, the idea with this Dodgers team is they know how talented they are, and they are, I think, reluctant to change too much, considering they did have certainly the best record in the National League during the regular season. I think as much as there is a focus on Shohei, the guy they have to get going tonight is Will Smith. He has been, I think, one of their key guys all season long. The production has not been there of late. And as dependent as they are in the top three hitters in their lineup, we know Freddie Freeman's playing on one leg. We've actually heard a lot of the similar discourse in the ALCS, which I've been covering more closely, about Aaron Judge, who finally broke out last night. I tend to think that the Dodgers go somewhat status quo here tonight and hope that Shohei gets going. And if he doesn't, then it probably becomes a much more urgent topic of discussion entering game four.
If it's status quo, it means that Teoscar Hernandez will be in the four hole for the LA Dodgers. And, you know, as Blue Jays fans and people who cover the Blue Jays on a routine basis over the summer here, we're interested in the storylines that do affect the Blue Jays. And, of course, you know, Teo's, interactions with Hazel May have been very, very fun to watch over the course of this series so far. But I'm interested in the future of Teoscar Hernandez, who's a free agent this offseason. I mean, maybe it's too much to dream about a reunion. Maybe the bridges are burned. But what do you expect this run, this platform, the season that Teo had to do for his offseason and his future career earnings? Because, yeah, it's been a bit of a struggle bouncing around just a little bit since leaving the Jays, but it seems like this is a pretty hot commodity now.
It really is, and it's an interesting topic because there is not a ton outside of the obvious and Juan Soto as a free agent this offseason. The second and third top hitters, you would probably say, are Anthony Santander and Teoscar Hernandez in some order in terms of a reliable, proven bat. And Teo is certainly boosting his value during the course of this postseason with the way that he's performed in the big stage. I'm sure that it'd be interesting to me to see if the Jays jump in there and make a big play. There are a number of teams right now, and it's interesting that a couple of them are former Teoscar teams in the Blue Jays and the Mariners who need a big-time bat. I would say the Tigers are a very similar situation where they looked like they were probably a bat away from advancing in the previous round. This is what Teoscar's giving teams at a time where we're only watching four more teams right now. This is the equivalent of the player that goes on the heater during the Stanley Cup playoffs and signs a big-time deal. It seems as though those players that are making a big impact on when you're the handful of teams that are still playing at this time of year, it really does leave a lasting impression. And you want to know, in different cases, different boxes that you can check. Dodger Stadium traditionally has not been a great hitter's park. I think it's become more so. Certainly might be part of the reason why that the Dodgers have built this team out and maybe a consequence of that. But I think Teoscar being able to prove that he can excel in more of a pitcher-friendly environment. He's been able to play in the American League East, been able to play on the big stage. Hitters who can check a lot of those boxes tend to get paid, especially when there's not an abundance of free agent hitters out there, and that's exactly the case right now.
He's some of that low-hanging fruit, power bat. We'll see what happens with Teo this winter. Okay, the pitching matchups for Game 3 of the NLCS tonight, Dodgers-Mets. It's Severino versus Buehler. Doesn't necessarily scream NLCS, but here we are. Is it advantage Mets tonight with Severino, given Walker Buehler's struggles so far this season?
Yes, it is. I think this is advantage Mets. It was interesting. As you know, if you have any Mets fans in your life, they're almost always looking for the negative reason or the what might happen next in a bad way. I'm not sure if you know any fan bases like that, but this is how the Mets fan base is. I would say this. I had a Mets fan ask me yesterday, do you think all the pressure's on us? I said, no, it's not. The pressure's on the Dodgers. It's 1-1. The next three games are at Citi Field. And in case you haven't noticed, the Dodgers had to go with a bullpen game in Game 2 of the NLCS. And Jack Flaherty is really the only guy they've got who consistently takes them deep into games. In the Buehler start against the Padres, that was the game that got away from them early. The Dodgers made it interesting late. I think Buehler has a ton to prove on the road in a situation like this. So, yes, he was able to stay in the game last time to give them some quality and at least make the game close later on. But I think Buehler's got a ton to prove, whereas Severino has shown it before in the past when he was with the Yankees in the postseason. I think I know a lot more tonight about what I'm going to see from Severino than Walker Buehler.
We're talking to John Morosi of MLB Network ahead of Game 3 of the NLCS. I'm going to look backwards just at last night's game. Obviously, the Guardians, like, trying their best, it felt like, for most of that. But also, you know, kind of, I guess, spoiling it themselves, like beating themselves at times. Multiple bases loaded, opportunities where they just couldn't execute, making their own errors. And now their starting pitching, we know, is quite thin. And you've got the Yankees with control of this thing. To me, it feels like there's not a lot of hope for the Guardians. Is it too early to say that in a series where things can flip as easy as anything?
Ailish, I agree with you. I think that the Guardians have reached a pretty dire position and they have to dramatically change things around in Game 3. Where we were at, and it was interesting, we were talking to Mike and Dexter on the show this week about it. The Guardians have to play close to perfect baseball to beat the Yankees, and they have not done that. Too many walks in game one, too many errors really in both game one and game two. The dropped pop-up, and it was certainly a wind-influenced play, but still, that's a play that has to be made. A missed play in right field that allowed Volpe to score, a missed pitch to Judge that allows him to hit the ball out to center field, an incredible shot that really got him going again. You think about the Yankees, Eilish, they really, offensively, they've had some good nights. They haven't had a lot of great nights. And last night was starting to look like a great night for them late with Judge getting involved. They've gotten to this point now. They've won four straight games this postseason without Judge really getting going until his last swing. That's a pretty frightening proposition for the Cleveland Guardians. And you consider as well, they'll start Matthew Boyd in game three. He only made it two innings against the Tigers in game five. And, oh, by the way, you've got to deal with guys like Gleyber Torres, who's having a really good postseason, Judge, Stanton. I do wonder if against the lefty they might make the move with Aaron Boone to put Stanton in the four hole, because Austin Wells has struggled a little bit. And Stanton's been so dynamic, one of the better postseason hitters we've ever seen, to be honest with you. So I think for a lot of reasons, the Yankees are in firm control of the series. I like Clark Schmidt pitching game three. The Guardians have to find a way. And I think the guy that I'm watching most carefully in game three for Cleveland, yes, it's Ramirez, but it's Mississauga's own Josh Naylor. Josh has got to be the guy, the big guy in the middle of the lineup to drive in some runs. I thought he had some really good at-bats in the previous game, but you saw him in that bases-loaded situation. Yeah, it was a sack fly, but he feels like he just missed that ball where he almost hit a grand slam, which would have changed the game. Naylor, for me, better at-bats in game two. He's going to have to be dynamic for the Guardians in the middle three games in Cleveland.
John, what's the best Yankees redemption story being authored at the moment? Carlos Rodon was public enemy number one for a little while. He pitched the lights out in game one. Stanton, of course, has had his trials and tribulations. He might be the best player or the MVP for the team at this moment. Maybe it's Luke Weaver, who didn't really have a position, was toiling a little bit, struggling at least, and now he's a lockdown closer for the Yankees. Like, what individual performance has turned around the most for you?
To me, it's a continuation of Giancarlo's postseason excellence. But to your point, Justin, it's the up and down nature of his tenure in New York. He's a great story. And we were talking about him in game one with the home run and everything he's been able to do for the Yankees in the postseason. And Dexter Fowler actually said he's going to go to the Hall of Fame. I had to think about that for a second and look at the numbers again. But when you consider what he's done, he's now well over 400 home runs. Still has a number of years left on his contract. And even when he's not healthy for a full season, he's still banking 25 to 30 homers a year. And when you take all that into consideration, if he gets to 500 homers plus one of the best postseason track records ever, it's probably in. And the one thing that I think puts him over the top is if the Yankees win the World Series, and he's a huge reason why, which he's working on that right now. He's about halfway there when you think about it, about being up now 2-0 in the ALCS, with Stanton being a huge reason why. So I think that for the big sweep of time and what it means for his legacy and maybe getting to his first World Series, that to me is the story that I'm really attached to the most, because we think about the Yankees. This is right now tied for the second longest title drought they've ever had. It's remarkable. They have not gone to the World Series since 2009. Seven different American League teams have made the World Series since the Yankees' last appearance, including the Royals twice. So the Yankees are, in their minds, way overdue for a World Series title. And I think in a lot of ways, it's Stanton's time. So he's been my favorite story for the Yankees this year.
With Rodon, though, specifically, and it's not my favorite story, I frankly don't really like Carlos Rodon, but if he pitches the way he did in game one, with Gerrit Cole obviously getting two starts in a World Series and this American League Championship Series at the very least, like, are the Yankees beatable if Rodon and Cole did what they do once more and then, I guess, in a World Series? Like, with that 1-2, it's going to match up against anyone quite well in a World Series, and frankly, Cleveland won't be able to deal with that a second time.
That's correct. I think that if Rodon and Cole pitch like this, Justin, you're exactly right. There's no other team that has a rotation that could compete with the Yankees right now. And Clark Schmidt's pretty good as well. I think we'll see that in game three. I'm a big fan of Clark Schmidt. I think he handled himself very well against the Royals in game three of the division series. And you look at just the shortage for me of quality pitching depth. Look at the Dodgers. All the money they've spent, they're going to openers and different strategies. The Tigers had Skubal and chaos, and then at some point in time, Skubal even gave it up in game five. I just think we're at a time in the game where good starting pitching is in such short supply that when you have it, it really stands out, especially when you get to hand the ball to a bullpen like what the Yankees have had with Holmes and Hill and Canely and Weaver. Weaver is a great story, as you mentioned. He had one major league offer last wintertime. One. It was from the Yankees, and they thought he was going to be starting pitching depth. All the information that we've got now, and this is one of the things I love about baseball. We're talking about a lot of analytics on the show that we're doing. I love the stories that analytics can tell us, and yet – never forget the human heartbeat in baseball. And you've got someone like Luke Weaver who believed in himself when really nobody else did. Amazing to see what he's done so far for the Yankees.
We're going to let you go, John, but I want to ask you how you prep differently for like the nerd cast, like the smart guy broadcast. Like, is it the same for you because you're already smart like that? Or is this like a whole new process going into another game?
Ailish, I can confirm that I am not smart like that, and so I have to really study. You know, it's interesting, I'm hosting the show, so to speak, so it's sort of a different role than I usually have, to be honest with you. So for me, it's been a lot of preparing to know what Mike and Dexter want to talk about. Obviously, I want them to shine, so for me, it's just a matter of bringing us back from break, keeping it simple, and I think letting my curiosity ask them some questions. So you observe things, and then notice things that, like, with wind direction and chase rates, there's some certain things that the metrics really tell a very good story about. So, yeah, I try to prepare generally. And then I know this, if there's one thing I've learned from watching a lot of Hockey Night in Canada over the years, it's that the game is the star and the analyst is the star, and it's not me. So I just try to let them shine, and I'm having a great time doing it.
I love that. Well, have a blast. That sounds really exciting. Enjoy Atlanta and Mercedes-Benz. We'll be calling you. Look, I think you get a G-Wagon. In a week or two, maybe.
Hey, believe me, if I
your car's ready, Mr. Morosi.
I will let the first person I tell is my wife, and the second and third people I tell will be the two of you. I promise.
We love it. All right, John, thanks so much for your time. We'll chat soon.
Have a great one. All the best. Thank you.
That's John Morosi of MLB Network and of Harvard. So,
yeah, I'm sure he's okay.
I think
he's
smart, guys. He's good. He's got like
probably right.
40 degrees. But that's something that I would feel very out of place.
Yeah,
the smart.
It would be. I mean, we got people on the staff who could handle that. But
that's that's Jay's Talk Plus.
You and I aren't getting those email.
No,
inquiries.
We're not getting asked to do that.
Not at all. No. The Giancarlo Stanton thing is interesting to me because you can be like a complete thorn in the side of every Yankees fan for years upon years, 162 games per summer, and yet you show up in a moment like this and start hitting some home runs and start outperforming the likes of Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, and everybody else in that lineup. And you could be living forever in Yankees lore.
That's not much different than the dialogue we have here around the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah. The difference is that it's, you know, the performance is larger in the regular season.
No, that's what I'm saying. But, like, flip it around. Like, let's say, you know, you are the guy that everybody likes to pick on in this market.
Sure.
And then you have a great postseason. And you help your team get to a
postseason success heals all wounds. Like you would trade a disastrous regular season for postseason contributions every single time out.
A few Maple Leafs that would probably take that.
And you get 162 games for sports talk radio hosts to complain about the player.
And then you can clip
and
that.
And then change their opinions.
And listen to it and be like, that's motivation.
That's motivation. I suppose so. Maybe there's just something called load management.
Yeah, maybe.
And like biding your time. And Stanton, who can barely, in the same way that Freddie Freeman barely can't move. Like, that's Bob Costas was like basically making excuses for Stanton at moments in that series because he can't run out balls. He can't get to first base and beat out double plays. But again, if he hits a home run every fourth, fifth, sixth time he's up at the plate, he could be the guy that takes the Yankees back to the World Series.
For me, it feels like both of the New York teams have like the most momentum right now. I know it's only a 1-1 series for the Dodgers and Mets, but you mentioned it. They're coming back here for a couple games. I just...
Three games, yeah, the 2-3-2.
Yeah, that's a lengthy amount of time to really like sink your teeth into it. I'm not going to get too much into the weather, but it's a bit more comfortable for the Mets to be playing in this than the Dodgers to be playing in this. You've got a better pitching matchup. You've got an opportunity to just take one step ahead tonight, and then you're eyeing it. And Grimace is there.
And Grimace is there,
What, that guy,
4, 5, 6, 7.
That guy's worth a win. His war is like Dalton Varsho.
He's leading the league in war, defensive war for Varsho.
So I think that it could be a Subway Series at this point. I'm never going to count out the Dodgers, but, you know, that their Achilles heel has been, what, pitching and not having enough depth there. They found a way to get to this point, but they need Shohei to have a monster postseason starting, like, right now, starting again.
Yeah.
Had a couple good moments, but, yeah, take over the game.
I'm not going to count out Cleveland yet, and I'm certainly not going to count out the Dodgers. I think Dodgers-Mets is going to go wire to wire. Like, it's going to be back and forth. Game 7 is probably what I expect. It's going to take something, though, pretty special for the Dodgers to make sure that they don't, you know, let it all out there at Citi Field and not be able to take it back to Dodgers Stadium. But, you know, you look at the pitching, and Morosi said it. The Mets, the pitching is not overwhelming by any stretch of the imagination. We're talking about Severino, let go by the Yankees, like, not necessarily someone who is moving the needle for anyone, and yet in a game 3 of the NLCS, they clearly have the pitching matchup won against a Dodgers team that went out and spent billions of dollars over the last couple seasons and almost $1 billion on Shohei Ohtani alone. The Blue Jays, like, they kind of designed their team to have the starting pitching to match up in spots like this, but it's not just the one thing. And as the Mets have decent starting pitching and the Dodgers kind of fail in that regard, the Dodgers have this unbelievable bullpen that can carry them through games and get them at least to a position where they're competitive when they are outmatched, at least from a starting pitching perspective. You can win multiple ways. I think we're seeing that in this postseason. And you can win in a year like the Yankees seem to be doing, where there just isn't even decent competition to go up against. The fact that the Guardians, Tigers, and Royals were their competition in the actual division series, that's who they had to go through to get to a World Series, not there yet. It just says something about, if you can put a decent team together, you definitely have a chance. The Yankees, this isn't a great Yankee team, I don't think at all. Mm-hmm. But they're decidedly the favorites to go to the World Series and maybe win it.
Mets are slight dogs tonight. I know we'll do our best bets moving forward, but right now to win the World Series, Yankees -105 favorites, Dodgers +180, Mets +430, Guardians 14-1. So it shows kind of where the public is betting. We'll do some best bets maybe after we talk to Luke. I got some from tonight's game. I just want to see goals for the Leafs. And I mean, for the Kings too. We got a revenge goal. I've got one clocked in there.
Perfectly. I don't know. I think the Kings might be trying to just dumb it down the water.
Did you see their previous game?
Dumb it down
game?
A little bit, given that it was 8-7
that
last
was
time.
Crazy.
And pretty ugly. So I wouldn't be surprised to see focus on that side of the ice. And maybe
how about
under,
a power play?
But I am hoping that
a power play goal close. Maybe for the Leafs in this economy.
Yeah, that probably it would go a long way.
Because if they're, so they're 0-9. We know that now. It's been blasted in front of your face on every social media channel. How do you, like, dig yourself out of that? You got to get one tonight. You got to get two by the weekend. Like, it's – there's a hot seat on a coach who just took over that spot. It's, like,
I wouldn't,
like,
be worried
hilarious.
About goals. I'd be worried about, like, entering the zone.
Yeah, maybe
cleanly.
Enter the zone,
like,
get a couple
it's
shots.
It's been really, really ugly. If there's one sore spot for the Maple Leafs so far this season, it's been the performance of a power play that just most recently let them down in the postseason.
Poor Savvy comes in to take that job over. And
yeah, but
it's
I mean,
not, I don't think it's, and I want to say, I don't think it's his fault.
I think the blood, well, there's got to be some blood on his hands.
But like,
there's no excuse to have those players and if for it to look as disorganized as it is right now.
Yes, but I think there could be some tweaks made by the players as well. Like it's,
sure.
That they have a
it's
lot
an
of talent.
All encompassing.
A lot of talent, but maybe they're trying too hard, like squeezing your stick too tight. We're going to talk about this with Luke Fox, but we'll remind you, NLCS Game 3 is going to, the pregame coverage is going to start around 7:30 on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Game first pitch is just after 8. We've got the Kings and the Leafs up on Sportsnet. That's a 7:30 puck drop. I'm going to get there around 7:47 is my thought. We got a couple other things on the network. You got Bruins Avs on Sportsnet 360. Avs are struggling. They need to win. And then there you go. You got Brooklyn and the 76ers.
A little Sportsnet Plus action.
Sportsnet Plus. Got lots. You can charcuterie board it up tonight. You can watch whatever you'd like.
It's the time of year where the
just
charcuterie board is always worth laying out.
There's lots to feast on. We'll take a quick break. We're going to talk to Luke Fox of Sportsnet. Of course, tee us up for tonight's Wednesday night hockey between the Kings and the Leafs.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame on SportsCenter, SportsCenter 590. The Fan a little later on. We'll have the Kings and the Leafs at Scotiabank Arena on SportsCenter with a 7:30 p.m. puck drop. And to get us set for that is Luke Fox of Sportsnet. Luke, I know you talked to Justin on Saturday because Justin said you came in and it was like, you were like fired up.
He said you came in hot.
He said it was hot Fox. That's what he called you.
Oh, I wish my wife called me that.
You could call her that. You know,
she wouldn't take my last name.
Smart.
I fired up. Well, it was opening night. I was trying to bring some energy, maybe. I don't know.
You said it in a good way. It was a good thing.
Well,
there was rave reviews. Everyone in the box was pretty impressed by the energy you brought. So we just had to throw it out there.
So you better bring it tonight.
I think it's because you get to wear the fancy headset up in the box. Yeah. Like you feel a little bit more special.
Puts you in the mood.
Really intense up there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to be at the arena tonight, but as a fan, I'm looking forward to it. But before anything, we need to continue. We have to ask you about the amulet. What's going on with the amulet?
How do the group of reporters down there deal with such a
piece
controversial
of information.
Topic?
So I found out about this after we went in the dressing room because I wasn't on Twitter last night. So I haven't had a chance to ask John about it. But, I'm curious what he has to say because, maybe that's why he's back in the lineup after only missing one game. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's healing properties, right?
Do you think, would you feel comfortable? Like, do you think you'd be, told not to ask that type of question? Like, give us the behind the scenes. Like, would they say, you know what, reporters, no amulet talk tonight?
Oh, no. I mean, I wouldn't ask them in front of a live camera, but off to the side, I'd ask them, what's the deal? Yeah. Yeah, well, you don't want to put someone on a spot.
No.
Well, next time you get that headset on, we're going to have to relay some amulet information.
Yeah.
Okay.
So why is everybody sick, though? Because this is a thing that's been happening. Is the Leafs, are they the only team that gets sick? It feels like they're always sick. And Nylander might play, might not play, but sounds like there's something going around the team again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like any workplace, and a bunch of these guys are getting older. They've got kids at home now, and kids go to schools. I mean, the weather's starting to turn. I don't think it's that crazy. I think a lot of teams deal with it at some point in the season. But it is interesting. You know, I think John was battling through it in the Jersey game, still scored a great goal. And then he said it really took a toll on him, like to the point where he had trouble sleeping and lost a bunch of weight. And he took the morning skate today, which is kind of unusual. So I think he's trying to make up from some lost reps, trying to get the feel back. He'll definitely be in. Nylander, I'm like, you know, we're only game four of the season. Don't rush a sick guy back. It's fine. Keep him away from the team. Hopefully it doesn't spread more. But I guess what's interesting is that Berube mentioned that a couple other guys have been battling through something too. So it is going through the team a little bit here.
Well, you better be careful when you go in the dressing room, get your amulet on to keep the illness away. All right, that's the last amulet joke for now. Okay, so Timothy Liljegren tonight, probably drawing in. You would know more if that's confirmed or not at this point.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, perfect. Yep. So showcase game or an opportunity for him to prove that he wants to be a Maple Leaf and there's a spot for him. How do you view what's next for Timothy Liljegren?
Well, it's both. I mean, I don't think Connor Timmins has played poorly at all, but he hasn't played so well that it's a stretch to give Timothy Liljegren a look. I mean, three healthy scratches, pretty humbling for a guy. He had a really bad camp. The way he plays hockey was a bit more in line with how Sheldon Keefe sees the game as opposed to how Craig Berube sees it. This is a challenge to him. He wants them to play hard hockey, and that's really not been his calling card, right? So he wants him to win his puck battles. He wants to clear guys out in front of the net. He wants to make sure he makes the smart first pass out of the zone. I would say there's a little bit of pressure on Liljegren because the Kings should come in a bit fired up. They've had a couple days rest after what was a horrible defensive performance in Ottawa, an 8-7, really fun hockey game, but not the kind of hockey game that coaches get excited about. Like Jim Hiller this morning was saying how he wanted, you know, basically burn the tape. Like he didn't want to talk about it. It was like, you know, a sore point with coaches. So the Kings should come out hard and try and right some of the wrongs that they had in Ottawa. So I think this is going to be a test for Liljegren. He might be a little rusty. Like he's been sitting on the sidelines for a while now. There's no doubt the team wants to trade him, but you know, there's injuries right now. And if he can prove that he can be a useful player there, you know, he may hang around for a while for depth, because I think right now there's no pressure to make a trade like this week or next week. But eventually, once a whole bunch of guys come off LTI, they're going to need that $3 million cap space that Liljegren's eating up, unless there's another injury. So Yarncroc, Dewar, Hakanpaa are all on LTI. All have been practicing with the team for a bunch right now. Like they could probably come back and once the LTI minimum is up. So then the pressure comes on because the cap comes into play. And that's when I'm most curious to see what happens with Liljegren.
Yeah, that's an interesting, you know, I guess dilemma, right? Because, you know, once that cap crunch does happen, then I think teams will be more interested in actually making that trade. If there are teams that are ready and willing to do it, it might be better for them just to wait until the Maple Leafs have their hand for. So we'll see what happens with Liljegren tonight and if he can make some inroads, at least in terms of Craig Berube's good graces. Another tweak for the blue line is Oliver Ekman-Larsson getting some PP1 action, at least at practice. You know, we've seen this power play struggle and have some good moments, you know, in the past here with Morgan Rielly running it. But it seemed just with the brief time that Oliver Ekman-Larsson got with the power play that he offers a different dynamic, which is a shot that comes off his stick with a little bit more force than it does with Rielly. Do you expect Oliver Ekman-Larsson to be part of the healing of this power play unit, at least to start?
Yeah, I mean, it's worth a shot. I actually was a little bit surprised that they didn't start camp with him running PP1, just because that's kind of how they approached it last fall with John Klingberg, like bringing in a new guy, you know, he's a power play guy, try to make him feel comfortable right away. And then, you know, with the power play starting off 0-for-9, which is just atrocious, especially on the heels of what it did, or rather what it didn't do in the Bruins series. It's like, you got to do something. And I like the fact that Berube is making a change. I mean, we'll see if this is a necessary change, but I like that he's not just content to just say, oh no, they'll figure it out eventually, that he's being proactive here in making the switch. And Ekman-Larsson provides the threat of getting shots through from the point. And then you watch Morgan Rielly, and I think he's a fine facilitator, but he rarely shoots. And I think, you know, teams that do their pre-scout on the Leafs know that he's just looking to pass it off to one of the flanks, whereas Ekman-Larsson isn't afraid to let it go. I mean, in that Penguins game Saturday, he had 15 shot attempts. That was the most of anyone on the ice. Mm. He had the second most shots that hit the net next to a guy named Austin Matthews. So it's something that the Leafs aren't really used to, a defenseman that likes to let a rip. And hopefully it keeps the opposing penalty kill honest. So even if he doesn't shoot it, there's that threat there that he could dish off and maybe Matthews or Marner or someone else can get going, because they need to break through here sooner or later. They've been getting killed on both special teams, really. You know, their penalty kill has given up at least one goal in every game they've played. They've been kind of undisciplined in taking too many penalties. So, you know, as strong as their 5-on-5 game has been, it's an area that needs to shape up, I think, on both ends.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Matthews a few times there. I think natural pivot, someone that's scoreless as well. And I know we've seen, you know, last year with the back-to-back hat tricks, it's not the way it started this year for Matthews. But what's, like, the vibe around him? Not probably worried too much about not being on the score sheet in terms of scoring goals, still working hard, getting a lot of opportunities, not like he's not shooting. But, yeah, I think tonight would be nice. I think Leafs Nation would feel happy to see him score a goal to get that started.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he loves it too, right? Like, he wants to score one. But the vibe around him, I'd say, is unfazed. He really seems unbothered by it. He's getting his chances. I think he's hit a post, hit a crossbar. More importantly, he's winning his minutes. Like, his line is winning territorially against the opposition every night. He's going up against the other team's best lines, still helping tilt the ice. He's made some great defensive plays. It just hasn't fallen for him. Like I mentioned, I think he had 8 shots last game. Eventually it's going to fall. I wouldn't be worried at all. And just the way he carries himself, you can tell he's not worried. You know, like, let's see if this goes on for another week, then maybe we start hitting the panic button. But, you know, would anyone be surprised if he potted 2 tonight?
No.
Against Big Save Dave, has played all year. Ex-Leaf, yeah. David Riddick, yeah.
We're talking to Luke Fox of Sportsnet.ca ahead of the Maple Leafs and Kings from Scotiabank Arena. Have you had to update your player you like to talk to power rankings since Stephen Lawrence showed up with the blue and white?
The passion.
Yeah, he might have shot up to number one. He's a pretty awesome guy. Like someone turned to me, we were watching Morning Skate, and he's like selling after, you know, just a goal in warm-up. And, you know, they're like, has there ever been a happier Leaf? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, he's just like kind of a bundle of joy, and he's a great story, and he's winning over the coach. He's winning over teammates. He's totally just happy to be there. He doesn't even care how you pronounce his name. He's quite the guy. Max Pacioretty is going up there in terms of giving really thoughtful answers too. And in this line of work, what I find is guys who have been on multiple teams and guys who are at the end of their career are usually really good talkers because they have perspective. All they want to do is win a cup. And they've been in so many, like, multiple situations, different organizations, played different roles on different teams. He's been a captain before. So they have examples to draw upon. So they can provide a little bit of wisdom into the game. He said something really interesting yesterday. He was talking about how the way today's player protects the puck is way different than he was taught. He was taught to use his body. Today's player uses his edges. And he said he sent his kids, because he's got 5 kids and a bunch of them play hockey, he sent his kids video of Nylander and how he protects the puck using his edges. He's so impressed that he's sending his kids that, because his kids aren't living here yet. But he's watching their practices and games through video. And I find the older guys or the guys that are just happy to play for the team are often good guys to talk to.
The Stanley Cup helps too, right? For Lawrence specifically. Like,
yeah.
Have you noticed that covering the league for as long as you have, where if a guy's won, like, they just open up, like, it changes the way that they approach that because, yeah, they've done it. You can't take that away from them ever.
Yeah. That's an excellent point, Justin. And you feel it from Stolarz too. Even though he played, I don't even think he played a full 60 minutes in that run. It was all Sergei Bobrovsky. But his name is on the Stanley Cup. He was part of that team. He was a big part, actually. I think he got in 29 games in the regular season and played excellent. And they just carry themselves a little bit differently. Same with Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Like, you know, I covered him a little bit before he won and after he won. And there's calmness, right? Mm-hmm. It's like something you cannot take away from them. They're forever champions. And, you know, it says something that the coach has that too. Berube carries a certain confidence when he walks around the dressing room or into the media room, you know. They're winners.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you hope it has a trickle effect, right? You hope that it has a trickle effect, the whole rings in the room thing. Rings in the room, amulets around the neck, you know, you hope these things.
That's a powerful combination.
A lot of jewelry in that place. You know, Matthew's got an earring. Like, you know, everyone's be shopping at Tiffany's around the holidays. I want to ask you about Joseph Woll because, you know, he's been back on the ice as well. And the situation with all of these goalies, I called it a cachet of goalies that the Leafs have. Is it interesting? Like, you can take that. You can put that in your next Sportsnet.ca article. Having this little cachet of goalies, do you think there's any other teams looking to pluck maybe a Matt Murray from them?
Oh, wow. Well, no. If they wanted Matt Murray, they could have had him for free.
Now they want him because they have bad goaltending like the Colorado Avalanche.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. Is Matt Murray the answer in Colorado? But you're right. The Avalanche do have concerns. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. And if so, I don't know how much of a haul he'd bring. But you're right. You know, Hildeby played really well in his NHL debut. And they got 4 big goalies. And Joseph Woll, you know, took another step today. He actually faced shots from his teammates. He seemed to be smiling and laughing at at practice this morning. So, you know, hopefully he gets back in action soon. The thing I'd caution about that is unless you're getting a really good trade return, maybe it's better to keep the depth for yourself, especially with the track record they have. Like, you don't want to be all of a sudden be the team needing a goalie.
Yeah, one trade, one injury, and all of a sudden, dealing with injuries in terms of Wall potentially the entire season. We shouldn't put that out there, but that may, in fact, be the reality. Last one for you. Kings are always an interesting team to have come through, partly because it had a bunch of winners, at least historically, but didn't have Drew Doughty today. Disappointing, Luke, for you and your counterparts that you didn't have Drew Doughty on the mic today in the bowels of Scotiabank Arena.
Yeah, we were talking about that. He comes through once a year, right? Because Western Conference team, and he always, you know, gives us some great quotes. Usually, like, takes some shots at the Leafs at having not won. But it was interesting. Apparently, you know, he was messaging the team. Like, we were talking to Quinton Byfield today, and he was saying that basically Doughty made it clear that you have to beat Toronto. Like, as a London guy, he would usually have a whole bunch of family and friends drive in for this game. And it's one of those cases, you know, love beating the Leafs. And I think he felt that. And the Kings have a bunch of local guys. So I think Byfield said he had like 30 or 40 tickets set aside. Brant Clark had a dozen. So there's going to be a good contingent of Kings supporters in the building.
All right, I can't wait to cheer against them, possibly, when I'm there as a fan, not as a media member.
You can't cheer. You're media.
I'm coming as a fan tonight.
You're in the seats.
So I'm in a paying member seat, and I will be cheering.
Okay. Yeah. No laptop and coffee for you.
It's strictly vibes for me. Really.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Enjoy it.
Yeah, enjoy it. Thanks for your time tonight. Enjoy the game.
All right, have a good one, guys.
Thanks so much. That's Luke Fox of Sportsnet.
It's another hot appearance, honestly.
It's a hot fox. Yeah, it's good. I don't know. I don't know if I can say that. It feels weird.
No, you can say it.
Yeah, it's a hot fox. Hot fox. Okay, let's do some hot bets. So I'm
safer.
I'm ready for tonight.
Okay, unload your goal scorer. Problem.
Because I had the difficulties of being out of province for Leafs Habs.
Save you some money.
Yeah. Honestly. Well, I was driving to Leafs Habs, and you're getting close to Quebec, and the signs start turning French, and you're like, I need to place my bets, because as soon as you enter there, you're locked out. So I didn't win any of those, because I did not have the Leafs losing 1-0 on opening night. So, and these are a couple things that Luke did say. Matthews, 2-plus goals, I love, at plus 410. You can't bet one goal. Like, it's just minus money, and he hasn't scored yet, so... We have seen Matthews go on these little hot streaks where he gets three in a game, three in the next game. So maybe 2-plus goals at plus 410. Trevor Moore, guys, we know the revenge angle. This guy loves to play against the Leafs, plus 290 tonight. And then Anze Kopitar was talking to the media earlier today, and by his calculations, and I think people have probably fact-checked
it. The fan hockey show, wasn't it?
Yeah. Was it today?
It wasn't just the media. It was yesterday. Our guys.
Okay.
I mean, it was yesterday.
Fan hockey show. Our guys and our guy. Anze Kopitar said that he thinks that Toronto's the only away rink he hasn't scored in.
That seems impossible.
I agree, but whatever. He said it, so he's manifesting. That's plus 240. And I love that Luke gave Quinton Byfield a shout out because York Simcoe Express alumni. It's my guy. He's got like a million people come to the game. I don't have the odds. I didn't write this one down, but sprinkle a little.
There you go. You're going to be spraying the board.
I'm hoping that I see some goals.
So if it's 1-0 behind a stolen
shutout, then I'll be disappointed. Byfield's plus 350.
It's going to be a rough one. I'm going to focus on game three of the NLCS, Mets and Dodgers. Severino versus Walker Buehler. As we talked about with John, I think the pitching matchup favors the Mets, so I will bet on the Mets. Mets plus 100 at home. That seems like an easy bet, but also I'm going to go over 4.5 Ks for Luis Severino. He has surpassed 4.5, so 5 or more. 11 of his last 12 outs over that span, he's averaged 6.25 Ks per start. That is since August 1st. So he's been striking out batters at a pretty good rate for a while now. So I will take the over 4.5 Ks with the Mets plus 100. And because we were talking to John about Giancarlo Stanton and how much of an impact he's had on these playoffs so far with the Yankees, who are only 2 wins away from reaching the World Series. He's still plus 550 to win an ALCS MVP. He'd probably win it right now if the vote was done today. Yeah, they still need two more wins, and Aaron Judge just hit a home run, and maybe he's going to get going. But right now it's Stanton, and you get him at plus 550. He's the third shortest choice among those who are offered. So I'm going to play a little Stanton 550 because Morosi and Morosi types are talking up Stanton at this juncture.
I love it. What have you made of the new faces on the Leafs? I think everybody seems to fit really well. I love Lorenz's story. Obviously, mm-hmm. if you haven't seen it on Twitter, I think it was his sister.
I believe it's his sister.
Posted a photo of Lorenz as like a kid in the Leafs jersey, dressing up as Halloween. And obviously, we've seen all the stories about how much he loves being a Leaf. That's always heartwarming. It's like Tavares when he came home with pajamas.
Yeah.
I think that has been a really nice start. But Ekman-Larsson, I think defensively, the Leafs feel, I feel so much more at ease when I watch him and Chris Tanev and just like the way that they can control the puck. And they're very different players. Like Chris Tanev is like as boring as possible, which is amazing.
He's the anti-Lorenz in some way.
Yeah, like he is so boring. But OEL, I love like his puck ability. Like he pops, right? And those two are very different. So I've really enjoyed all the new faces on the Maple Leafs. And Stolarz might be the one that's kind of underrated as well.
Yeah, given the circumstances, he might be one of the more important additions of the entire offseason for any team, that is, because Stolarz has been so good and he's had such a big role, at least to start. I agree with you on Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I was not, like, it's still a little early, mm-hmm. and I'm still...
Well, we're making justifications after four games.
I'm thinking about what happened in Vancouver. I saw last year's playoffs where mm-hmm. when he was forced to do a little bit too much, there were some problems. He was better in a third-pairing role. But especially from the perch at Scotiabank Arena on Saturday, watching from above where you can see a little bit more of what the defensemen are doing specifically that are following up the play, him and Jake McCabe look like such, I called it a professional pairing, and I don't think I can come up with anything better.
Nice.
They feel like they are perfectly balanced. They feel like they're in complete control when they're out there. I think they've been the most obvious change in that you have a stabilizing number two pair when the Maple Leafs, frankly, for the last 5 years have been searching for the top pair to be stabilized, let alone the second. So I've liked what I've seen from the defenseman. Of course, Chris Tanev has been so quiet, and that's a great thing. But Stolarz looks like a really good goaltender.
Yeah.
I think he could quell any like concern over Joseph Woll if he just keeps playing the way he has. I think he's had a great start. And I think, like Luke said, once you win, pressure's kind of off, even in a market like Toronto. Finally, some guys in that room with the pressure that feels like it doesn't exist, what that could do for the group. Maybe it's not as simple as throwing on an amulet, but maybe it helps the group.
Oh, the amulet. It is good. We're going to talk about that when we go to our radio-only session.
We may have burned all the jokes, though.
No, I can come up a couple more. That's in about 2 minutes. We're going to talk for about half an hour on Sportsnet 590 Fan, which will lead you into MLB NLCS Game 3, which will be Mets-Dodgers. That will take you also on Sportsnet 1 if you're looking to watch that. But then Sportsnet, when we say goodbye now, it will take you to the Kings and the Leafs. Their pregame show starts at 7, puck drop at 7:30. We've got some NBA preseason on Sportsnet Plus. We've got Sportsnet 360 as well with some NHL action.
We got it all tonight.
This is October for you.
One thing I'm surprised of with you, as we got a minute left here.
Oh boy.
Is that you're not into the Shohei experience as much as I thought you would. It seems like the Dodgers are low on your list of preferences when I thought.
No, all I said my preference is Yankees, Dodgers, comma, Yankees, Mets. Yeah. So they're up there number one still.
Well, there's only four teams left, so you can't have them
before
all.
Before the MLB postseason began, I said the thing I want is Yankees, Dodgers.
But then I went back to my Phillies
love, and
because
I
you don't
regret
seem,
that.
You just don't seem into the Dodgers, and I'm frankly surprised.
I'm into the Dodgers.
I don't think you are.
But I'm kind of into Grimace.
I think you exactly.
I think Grimace is still in my
it's
heart.
It's okay to change your
did
mind.
Did you see him on the subway?
No.
Oh,
no,
my
I did.
God,
I did.
Justin.
I did. That was a while ago.
It's so fun. I don't know. I guess. And mascots are, I like loved Gritty, Grimace.
Yeah, that really is the key to your fandom. Throw something.
I think in a previous life I was a mascot.
Big and animated in front of you.
It's just so goofy.
And it turns the trick.
Yeah. I'll see Carlton later. He's a bit more like demure. Do you know the kids are saying that now?
Yeah, I do. Grimace over maybe the greatest baseball player of all time.
No.
Who can't do anything, though, apparently, when runners are not.
Let's see how tonight goes. I still believe in the Dodgers.
All right. You can have every team, then.
Okay. All right. We'll be back on Sportsnet 590 The Fan in about 5 minutes.